Actually, why don't we do this? Let's bring Alex on because this is his specialty, and it'll be great to have him join the conversation. Mike, you're welcome to stick around. For as long, really, until we end this collector's MD addiction gambling discussion. But let's bring on Alex. You ready to come on? Give me a thumbs up. There it is. Alex, welcome to Sports Cards Live. How are you?
Hey, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Please meet Joe and Mike if you haven't yet.
Joe, Mike, great to meet you both.
What's up, Alex?
Hope you guys had a great fourth.
Thank you.
Love
Thank
what you're
you
doing,
Canada. Alex. Yeah, and a good Canada that. Day up here. So, let's continue the discussion. And I do want to just a couple of comments. First of all, Mookie Chilson, what's up, Mookie, says getting out of bed in the morning is a gamble, but so is going to bed at night. People, you don't always wake up. So yes, crossing the street is a gamble. Everything is often a gamble in life. But Mike, to Mike again, I want to ask, there's been a lot of talk about this lately, Mike. I've done some talking about it myself on Instagram and on X. Alex has been doing a bit of the podcast circuit lately, and Collectors MD has really caught people's attention. Lots of talk about sports card addiction. Mike, was that also a part of what kind of sparked you to do your 11 ways that we gamble in the hobby video?
No. So I do videos occasionally on sports card addiction. I did one a couple of months ago, and I actually featured Collectors MD in the video where I talked about, hey, there is now help. Because when I did it a couple of years ago, a video on sports card addiction, there wasn't a sports card dedicated help for it. But there was a Reddit post a month or two ago where a woman posted about her husband. He had lost $300,000 of their money, and they were $100,000 in debt because of it. And so I just talked through that, and then talked about Collectors MD being there. And every time I do it, I get a lot of comments from people, or private emails or DMs from people saying, I'm a mess, I need help. And now I actually have a good place to send people.
Appreciate that, Mike.
It's true. It's something that, and I haven't done this yet, but I want to work into all of my Sports Cards Live episodes, sort of like at the beginning or at some point, just a quick spiel or a quick announcement, that if you are having problems, if you find yourself running into financial relationship issues because you can't stop spending money, and maybe Alex, I'll get you to coach me on how to word this. Maybe you're the best. Maybe you can absolutely help me word it and just make that announcement, because you go into any casino and there are warnings and helplines all over the place. We don't see that in the hobby, whether we're in the online casinos, the Whatnots, the Fanatics Lives, eBay Live, Loop, whatever other ones there are. We don't see these, at least I don't think we see them there. We don't see them at the LCS when you're buying wax. And I don't want to say perhaps we should, because we're not regulated. I think a lot of people think we should. And I mean, it would be nice if we had that, but we're not there yet. Mike, what do you think of that? Do you think that we should be there? Do you think that the hobby has grown, that the with the price of wax now, that we should be there?
Probably. I hate to think about regulation coming into the hobby, but I also don't know that it would impact me in any way. But the hobby has gotten so big, and there's really, I mean, the hobby is this huge umbrella or tent. And there are some portions of the hobby that probably should be regulated. You can get, anybody can get on Fanatics and sell. You've got 10-year-old kids selling, and there's nothing that's controlling what they're doing, or if they are scamming anybody, you don't know. It's difficult out there for a new consumer. And I always get comments, well, new consumers should do the research first. But shouldn't we make it easy for them to understand what they're getting themselves into?
Yeah, I mean, you put on a movie and, you're going to see explicit language, sexual, drug references. You know, you get that before the movie starts to protect people, to protect youth. Why don't we have that whenever a break starts online, or before they start, or when you go to check out for your spot? You might lose all your money, whatever it might be. Alex, let's go to you. What do you think of this? And bring us up to speed on your thoughts on these two points we've talked about so far.
Yeah, Jeremy, first of all, thank you so much for giving Collectors MD this platform and this stage.
I do not accept the thank you. This is my duty. It's all of our duty. So exactly. I appreciate it. I appreciate it, Alex, but please don't thank me.
You guys hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're talking about just very, very honest and high level awareness. That's all it is. It's you talked about, you know, creating some sort of general messaging before you go live or right before you jump into the topic of discussions. That's all we need. And we need it across the board. We need to see it on the platforms. We need to see it on social media. Just a layer of support, a layer of awareness. If you or you know somebody who has a problem, which we're seeing more and more of in this hobby, there's a place for you. You do not have to feel alone. You don't have to feel a sense of isolation. Collectors MD is here to support you no matter what you're going through in your hobby, in your collecting journey. That's all it is. And we can get into it, but, you know, a lot of the higher powers, the platforms, the breakers, the manufacturers, they have looked the other way for far too long. And as the hobby, as collecting continues to head in this direction that just shares so many synergies with gambling and gambling-like mechanics, I mean, it's just so glaring that change and reform needs to happen, and it needs to happen fast. Because like you said, Mike, I mean, we have 10-year-old kids that have access now, and there's no sense of education. There's no sense of accountability. Where are the parents? You know, like we need to look out for not just the hobby, but the people in the hobby, especially the next generation. So that's what we're doing with Collectors MD. And, you know, again, I'm just really grateful that people are, you know, being so receptive and positive and helping spread such an important message, because this message is way bigger than me. And frankly, it's bigger than Collectors MD. It's something that has been the missing link in this space for far too long. So,
you know, in like Alex, in addition to doing what we can as a community to save lives, save marriages, save houses, save families, we are also trying to protect the future of the hobby at the same time, which is, I don't want to say which one's more important. The hobby is an important industry. It's an important lifestyle for so many of us. But kids with broken up families because of sports card gambling addiction, sports card addiction, we want to save all that. But like Orlando here says, we need to keep new collectors in the hobby, not getting in a hole and leaving it all together. I think that's an important part of it. Mike, you did your video. Were you thinking about that at all?
I think about that a lot. When new people come into the hobby, first of all, it is already confusing enough, but they assume that they need to join in on breaks and they need to be buying expensive wax. And there's nothing that's preventing this, nothing that's educating them about those things. And people, it is straight up gambling, like I said, and not low risk gambling. There, you can buy hobby boxes for hundreds, thousands of dollars. And it's gotten to the point, it's very easy to say, well, you're not opening wax for the value, which for some of us should be the case. But the prices have gotten so outrageous that you feel the need to get value back. Right. If you're opening a $500 box, which I've never done, by the way, you want to get a significant card or more in there. And if you don't, you just continue chasing and chasing and chasing, and eventually you end up in debt. A lot of people do. And that's very dangerous for a person, for a family, for a life.
You know, you mentioned a $500 box. Quick story about some of my personal firsthand experience going back to 2008. Upper Deck, the Cup had come out. I went to a local LCS, bought a tin, a box, a pack, whatever, for, you know, $600. Opened it, was extremely disappointed, felt like I just wasted $600. What did I do? I bought another one. I didn't leave the store. I bought another one. Opened it, felt like I just flushed $600 down the toilet. Maybe I got $80 worth of value back, but nothing I wanted for my PC. So extra, you know, even double bad. What did I do? Opened another one. I did it until I opened up all six boxes from the case, thinking eventually I'll get the case hit. Each box was a gamble. This was before Whatnot and Fanatics Live and the online breaking casinos with all the glitz and glamour and the high pressure sales tactics and all that. And I drove home literally feeling like I just blew through almost $5,000 or $4,000, whatever it was. And I was like depressed. I felt terrible. I felt embarrassed. I felt shame. I felt horrible. Now, let's go back to when I'm 12 years old. Here's another story. 12 years old, 1984 Opeachy hockey sticker albums. You know, remember the albums you used to collect in the 80s, if you're old enough to remember? I'm down to needing my very last sticker to complete the whole set so that I could go to school the next day and show all my friends I completed the album. Like, that was the goal. Every week, I'd get $2 a week allowance. I would go to the corner drugstore, and I would, you know, I don't know if you have drugstores down in the U.S. or not, but anyway, went to the corner store, and I would buy 8 packs of these stickers for $2. And I remember sitting there. I couldn't even get home first. I would open them at the cash register, at the counter, hoping to get that Ken Morrow. He won 4 cups with the Islanders. Hoping to get the Ken Morrow, a common sticker, to put in my book. And I'd spend my whole $2 allowance. And I'd walk home feeling like I just wasted my allowance. And I waited all week, did my chores to get, and I didn't get it. I didn't care if there was a Gretzky in there or another great player. I wanted that one card. And I walked home every week. I never got it from opening packs. Probably did this for a month and a half, 6 weeks in a row, something like that. It's a long time ago. But every week I would walk home feeling like I just wasted my $2 a week allowance. Then, you know, 2008, I'm doing it for $600 a pack instead of 25 cents. So, you know, there's been gambling in the hobby going, even when you didn't care about hits, you wanted to get that last card for your set. And I would gamble every week to get it. What I ended up doing, went to the school one day and I had all my traders, a stack of them. One kid was willing to take the Ken Morrow and peel it out of his album, give it to me so I could stick it in mine. And I gave him all my traders for the one card. That's what I had to end up doing. But I spent weeks and weeks, $2 a week after $2 a week, getting them. So a couple of stories there for myself. Alex, you are hosting you're having these meetings with the members of, I'm calling them members of Collectors MD. Are you hearing stories like this week after week? And maybe you have one or two you'd like that you can share with us, of course, without violating anybody's privacy.
Yeah, these stories we're seeing so much going on. I mean, across the board. These weekly support meetings are intended to offer a space where collectors can talk openly about the emotional, financial, and mental weight that can come with hobbying, with collecting. It's not necessarily therapy, but it's real support from people who get it. So we have created a community that has, again, just been incredibly supportive. And each week we meet, it's Wednesday night. That probably is going to shift. We're most likely going to pivot to a couple times a week to sort of cater or accommodate different types of collectors and different types of addiction. But we are seeing stories. And I think the biggest issue is that people have been afraid. People have been scared to share their stories either publicly or maybe even privately with their friends, with their loved ones, with their family members, with other hobbyists. And so, again, we are providing a sense of support and comfort so that people realize that they're not alone and isolated. And so the types of stories we're seeing, you know, are frankly really, really scary. There's one individual who has gotten in so incredibly deep that, you know, in order to sort of scratch that itch, he needs to spend upwards of $10,000-$20,000 a night on whatnot. And he got in so deep, so far over his own head, where, you know, he was using any and all means in order to, you know, scratch that itch. And that, you know, meant whether it didn't matter if it was, you know, his own credit card, wife's credit card, his company credit card. And he got to a point where, you know, he was millions of dollars in the hole. And now he's, you know, on the other side of that, just digging himself out, trying to find a sense of relief. And he's going through it, you know, on a number of different levels, obviously with his family, from a legal standpoint, with his former employer. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. And again, there's so much of this happening behind closed doors that people don't realize, because again, most people keep these sort of things to themselves because, you know, perhaps they're ashamed. They're ashamed to admit, maybe not just to other people, but to themselves, that they have a true problem, that they've fallen victim to compulsion. And so, you know, that's one story. Other story, similar sort of vein, where one of the most well-known collectors in the hobby, and again, of course, we protect our members at all costs. Everything is completely safe and confidential, but this individual is very well known in the hobby. The three of you would most likely know who this person is. He reached out to me a couple months ago and was like, I can't believe I came across this, you know, this support group. This is exactly what I needed. He was like, you know, I look in the mirror and I'm disgusted with the amount of money that I've spent and that I throw to these breakers and these live streams, these live platforms. But there's a certain level of expectation, not just from those people that he spends money with, but the whole community, the hobby itself. People expect this guy to show up every night and put on a show, buy everything on the floor, join every break, buy all the, you know, $5,000-$10,000 spots for the WNBA rookie royalty product that just came out. I mean, we're seeing this so much more and more, and we just, you know, again, we need to be there for one another. We need to look out for one another. And, you know, there just needs to be a space where people can come to lean on when they're really in the thick of it.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. And you know, I think what you're doing is you're giving people a place to come and ears to listen to them and the support. I think that's number one, right? Talking it through, knowing that you're not alone is huge. And I love what you're doing with Collectors MD. And so thank you for what you're doing. Of course, Alex, I'm sure you're lots of thanks for you in the chat, and we'll give you more. I want to go to Joe for a moment, because I was chatting with Joe and I said, you know, I remember Joe a couple, I don't know when it was, maybe a couple of years ago, you know, you'd send me a text message. You're like, yeah, I just bought a first off the line. You know, like, I don't know. What were you going through when you were doing some of that? I'm not like, I don't think you have an addiction problem in terms of wax, Joe, but what is your experience in terms of having negative feelings about maybe wasting money, feeling like, I don't know that you necessarily have to have an addiction to in order to kind of have shame. I don't know, Alex, if that makes sense, but like, I don't feel like I was addicted to it, but I certainly had moments of feeling shame. Joe, what are some of your experiences with that?
Yeah, well, I'm risk averse by nature and frugal. So I didn't really ever open any wax until maybe like 2019, 2020, when I actually pulled a couple like Zions and Jaws out of some Target blasters and was like, whoa, that was pretty fun. And so you get that dopamine hit, right? And then you're sort of, you know, you crave a little more. And so I started going on the Panini websites and looking for the Dutch auctions and doing what I could to, you know, kind of figure out what the best price point might be for, say, Prism football. I think I got 4 first off the line Prism football boxes in 2020, which was the Burrow, the Herbert year, Hertz. And maybe one of the worst things that could happened. I hit a Justin Herbert blue ice, which was awesome. But the drawback of that was I started to think, okay, wow, ROI is here in these boxes. And so from about 2020 to maybe 2022, I did throw some money in all various, products from Megas and Blasters online on eBay to, more Panini releases. And yeah, over time, the house wins. And like Mike was saying earlier, the prices jumped right around that time. The manufacturers sort of seized the moment of the frenzy that was happening and really amplified the prices to a point where it became less and less even a reasonable gamble. You factor in breakers on top of that, and I've never done a break, but that's where you get this exorbitant disconnect between playing the game, if you will, and then feeling pretty shoddy afterwards. So yeah, Jay Lee, I think you know me. I agonize over every purchase and every hobby dollar that I deploy because I'm thinking about what else I can get. This might amount to a cool Steph Curry card or a cool standard caramel, Sam Crawford or something. And when I see those those hobby dollars just vanishing between my fingers, I felt pretty bad. And I think it's probably been now 2 or 3 years. But one thing I'd like to maybe hear from Alex and all the panel on is eBay addiction, which I think you can manage the financial output a little bit better, but the compulsivity and a similar perhaps dopamine rush when you're bidding in live time on a card. I'm curious, Alex, if you work with clients even outside of the breaking category and maybe even more just in their overall relationship to the hobby and the amount of time, right? The time and energy and, checking your watch list at 2 a.m. with your wife next to you. And you're like, what am I doing here? So I'd be curious what you guys think about that component.
It's a good call out, Joe. I suffer from eBay app addiction for sure. The little blue light comes on and I have to clear them. I have to clear them regardless of what I'm doing. If I don't clear them, and it's not good. It's not good. But let's hear from the other guys. Mike, what about you? Do you have that issue?
Absolutely. eBay is a bad addiction. I had to move to a point a couple of years ago where I would not bid on anything on eBay unless I was doing a snipe bid through Gixxen at the end, because what would happen was I would get fixated on winning the item and I would end up just continuing to bid at the very end and would way overspend because I had to win it. And then afterwards I would have spent, $150 on a card that I could have bought for $110 or whatever. And there's obviously somebody else on the other end of that with the same exact problem. And so now I just say, okay, I'm going to put a max bid in of $110, do that through Gixxen, which allows you to bid before it's done, but you never see it. You're not part of it. You can put it in at any point. And it makes it easier and it helps you control those urges. And I saw somebody has talked about cards can't be the only addiction. It's absolutely right. There's obviously something in you that it becomes addicted to cards or whatever it is, buying on eBay, opening wax, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Fair comments for sure, Mike. And I think you've come up with somewhat a bit of a solve for yourself there. So that's good self-awareness and good execution. Now, Alex, in your groups for yourself even, are you running into people with, never mind breaking addiction, group breaks or personal breaks at the LCS, whatever it might be, are you running into people who are addicted to just buying singles at card shows, on eBay, wherever it may be, auction houses? Yeah.
Absolutely. I want to take a step back and bring up sort of a point you made earlier where gambling has been a part of the hobby. It's always had a presence since the very beginning, right? Whether it was buying packs and hoping to pull your favorite player, just chasing the big hit in the hobby box, that element of risk and reward is not new. But what's changed and what's made it more dangerous is this 24/7 access right? This shift. And so platforms like eBay and like these live stream breaking apps, they've taken something that used to be sort of occasional and turned it into something constant. So now you can chase auctions, you can enter breaks, you can place bids, you can rip packs all day, every day. There's no cool off period, there's no built-in boundaries, and the dopamine loop never ends. All of these different platforms or sort of different ways you can purchase cards, whether it be buying singles or joining a break, they all sort of gravitate around the same dopamine centers in your brain, right? It's all about that dopamine rush, getting that chase or chasing after something, having something to look forward to receiving in the mail. You're always just one click away from that next rush. So with eBay specifically, it's the endless scroll, right? It's the thrill of the snipe, the hunt for that you know, great deal. With breaking, it's live action, the communal hype, the illusion that you're next. It's all gambling, but now it's just dressed up as entertainment, collecting, and even investing. I mean, I saw people in the comments asking if stashing sealed wax is considered gambling. It all just feeds into the same dopamine centers in our brains. Yeah. And so the truth here is most of us, you know, didn't see that shift happen. It felt like evolution, but what it really did was it amplified the compulsion that we talked about earlier with just, you know, going to your local store and buying a box of cards or a pack. It amplified that exponentially. And we're not chasing cards anymore. We're chasing feelings, and we're doing it on platforms designed to keep us hooked. They're all designed, you know, the same way. You know, and I just want to say it's not about shame. It's not about like putting anybody down or telling somebody they have a problem or that they're an addict. It's just about creating awareness, because once you see it for what it really is, you can start to take back some of that control.
Yeah, the constant availability in your pocket, the lack of friction. You know, you don't have to get in the car and drive. You don't even have to go to the website of a card seller, buy it and wait a couple days for the box to arrive, or whether it's like a Topps Now or a Panini Instant or some reverse Dutch auction on Panini that, you know, you might buy from. There's no way. It's right there. It's very easy to just overspend, I suppose, if you don't have self control. And now, but this is not exclusive to the hobby. And like, porn addiction is a real thing. You know, I don't know what people, Playboy magazine, maybe was it before maybe there was some secret way to get VHS tapes of it. Now it's on your phone. Like, everything is easier now that we have our phones. I'm just saying, it's that lack of that lack of friction makes anything that is literally something that you don't actually have to have in hand right away, makes it that much quicker, right? You can just get it so much easier. So it's, again, it's not, this is the way the world is going. And I saw a comment myself, and there's a couple, I think it's Stanley Gordon. I just want to read a couple of Stanley Gordon's comments here, you guys, because I see both sides of this, but I want to, so he says here, don't mean to be harsh, but a little self-discipline goes a long way. I highly doubt buying into breaks is the individual's only gambling addiction. Okay, maybe not, but doesn't mean that people can't help, I suppose. He also says, I just don't feel it's the hobby's job to solve the issue of addiction. Every product can be consumed in an unhealthy way. And by every product, I don't think he means every card product. He means any product. From milk to fancy watches sort of thing. It's an interchangeable topic that's beaten to death, he says. And then he said, it's not the card's fault. The individual needs to look inward. Now, I'm just going to say one thing to all this, which is, it doesn't sound to me like Stanley Gordon has ever had somebody close to him suffer from addiction. Because I have. I have, to the extremest of situations. And I went through a phase of my life where I had some similar sort of thoughts in my head to what Stanley Gordon has, and he's sharing here with us. And it wasn't until it hit home that I started to realize that I was kind of being very limited in my view and unempathetic and just not the way I wanted to continue to be. So, but Alex, I know that this is something that's close to you and you'll probably do a better job of articulating kind of your response to that sort of outlook than maybe I have, because I can get really emotional about this very quickly. So I'm going to turn it over to you, please.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy, you brought up such a great point. I think a lot of people just don't necessarily realize, and it's not Stanley's fault. It's not their fault that they don't understand, you know, the full scope of addiction and what addiction can do to an individual. And if you haven't had somebody close to you experience addiction, you haven't seen the pain, the suffering, the challenges that can come with different types of addiction firsthand, then, you know, you might just not necessarily be able to wrap your head around how, you know, something like a childhood hobby, sports cards, could be considered addiction, right? So I totally hear where you're coming from, Stanley, and I don't think you're being harsh. I just think self-discipline, you know, it is a big part of it. But the reality is these systems are built to exploit the lack of self-discipline. It's not just about willpower. It's about constant exposure, psychological design, and the way these platforms are sort of engineered to trigger impulse loops. And you're right, that breaks might not necessarily be someone's only gambling struggle. But for a lot of people, it's the one that feels the most socially acceptable. It's not, you know, necessarily a casino. It's fun. It's community. And so that makes it like a lot easier to justify and way harder to recognize when it becomes a real issue. So this isn't about like removing personal responsibility. Like, as adults, I understand, trust me, it's very important for us to take a step back and self-reflect and make sure that we're taking personal inventory and you know, doing things responsibly. But it's also about acknowledging how powerful these systems are and why real safeguards matter. And again, especially for the kids, especially for the next generation of individuals who just don't necessarily have the tools and resources, or perhaps, you know, aren't properly educated on this sort of stuff. So again, it's adding a layer of support. It's adding a layer of education and providing tools and resources to protect, you know, the people in this community.
And those who might not have that level of self-discipline to pull away before it's too late for whatever reason. Mike, anything you would like to kind of say before you hop off? I know you got to go. I know it's late for you and you got big videos to put out tomorrow. But I want to give you a chance to kind of put a bow on your inaugural appearance here on Sports Cards Live. And I do hope to have you back. But anything you'd like to say before you hop off?
I appreciate the discussion. The comments are fantastic, too. You know, like Greg Midlife Cards talking about kids being protected, which is important. I see Ziggy, who's always got good comments, talking about breaks aren't the problem. And I don't think any of us ever said anything bad about breaks. You know, I think that there are a lot of things that are hobby specific that are addiction problems. And like we talked about, it's not specifically, or it may not be the only thing that you're addicted to, or maybe it just expanded your addiction problem. But yeah, there's just a lot of things that go into this issue, and I don't think we can cover it in the half hour that we've had.
Yeah, well, we'll continue, Mike, and again, I know you got to go. We'll continue chatting about it here with Alex, and in about 40 minutes time, we're gonna have Chris Hoge join the show with, and we'll have a new topic by then. Josh Adams is, I think, gonna surprise join as well at that point in time. But Mike, Junk Wax Hero, thank you for joining us. Look forward to seeing you at the National here in 25 days. So thanks again for joining us, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. See you guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. All right. So let's keep on talking, Alex. And maybe I'll take a moment now at this guest, well, as Mike has left, to read some comments from the chat that we haven't quite talked about yet. I got to just to add a little humor. Greg here says, going to bed is a bigger gamble for Mrs. Midlife. Sports Fix says, new wax is a double gamble. You hope to get the hot rookie and you hope he has a Hall of Fame career. Right. Which reminds me of the comment about, well, I think I have it marked to come, but, and you raised it, Alex, was, is is holding unopened wax a gamble? And right away, I thought about the Zion rookie class, and people were stocking up on that. And then it didn't work out. I mean, I think that is certainly a gamble. Chris C says the most gambling seems to be breaking plus opening wax. I don't disagree with that. Dan's Vintage says Alex is a true hobby hero. I think we're all on that page. Fallow Ball, good evening. Welcome to the show. Fun Bobby says, pretty sure that if you buy a box of chocolates, you're going to get chocolates. Daniel Brown says, regulate breaking. Timepiece Esquire says, my name is Timepiece Esquire, and I have an addiction to beautiful Pavel Bure cards. Justin Bode, it's been a while, buddy. He's checking in. I had to get a new girlfriend. Last one dumped me finally. Miss you, miss you too, Justin. I'm glad you're here. Dan's Vintage says, be smart with your money. Don't trust games of chance. Never use debt to fund a hobby. All great advice if you can execute upon it, which not everybody can. Cardboard and Plastic says, unfortunately, it is hard for us to influence new people in the hobby to not gamble when the biggest influencers are pushing mystery packs and it is supported by the biggest companies. Yeah, the only thing I'll say about that is we got to try, but if you want to try, try. I mean, not everybody is on YouTube. Not every new collector is on YouTube, but that's also not something that we can count on. And Alex, I'm going to ask you to take notes in your head to respond to a bunch of these after, okay?
Yep.
Dan Brown says, Jeremy, you should have a breaker on and legit challenge them on this issue. That's going to be a real difference maker. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I've had breakers on here before, and I'd be happy to have a breaker on. I know Ziggy's a breaker now, and he's always in the chat, and he's passionate about it. Maybe Ziggy's the guy. We'll see. Hockey Cardboard says, should card packs have warnings on them like cigarette packs? Alex, I want you to talk about that one after I'm done going through comments. Sports Fix, is stashing wax gambling? I think it can be. Dan's Vintage says, Jeremy, that is what the Gaudi Gum Company did to kids in 1933 with a Nap Lajoie. Yeah, I mean, they did it in 1923. The Patterson Chocolate Company did it with the one guy whose name is escaping me right now. It's a big hockey grail that I don't give two poops about because he's not an important player, thankfully. Brett Miles says, great topic. Hobby social content can point an unrealistic portrait of what collecting is, especially for someone starting out and or with limited funds. Big hit after big hit creates a skewed view. High Pop Professor says casinos can regulate the payouts of their slot machines like 90% of the money that is put in. The value of cards is so volatile that no guarantee of value could ever be made as a regulation. It's a tough problem. I think that's such a smart comment, High Pop. Thank you for that one. Okay, Midlife Greg says, this is such an important topic. Talking about it is crucial. Ziggy, no. So many people not participating in breaking are so concerned about breaks. It's the Catholic Church analogy. How about participate or make your own breaks? I hear what you're saying, Ziggy. The only thing I'll say to that is that people, just because you're not participating doesn't mean you're not observing and seeing what is happening. It's not just the Catholic Church. It's also people going to sporting events and saying, you suck out there. You know, like, well, you're not playing. You suck worse than they do. Sancho says, it's safe to open all the boxes as long as you don't sell the cards. If you don't sell them, you don't lose. I have so many issues with this comment, Sancho. I think that to me is something that you tell yourself, but just because you're not locking in a loss doesn't mean that you're not losing, especially if you don't like the cards. If they don't give you any satisfaction from owning them, I just don't agree with that one. Alex, I can see you've got a lot of thoughts brewing. Keep them brewing. Justin Bode, Jay Lee, I also quit drinking 172 days sober. Love you, baby, Justin, and congrats. 172, buddy. Keep it going one day at a time. Dan's Vintage says, auction house addiction is also a thing. Mookie Chilson says, Joe was right. Your attention is a currency. eBay loves stealing my attention. Ziggy No says, singles are the biggest gamble. You buy a card, you expect it to go up for no reason except market, no value add. Completely disagree with that, Ziggy. At least you know what you're buying, and you might have enough experience both in the hobby and in assessing players to really mitigate that risk. Whereas opening a box opening a whole box or buying a spot in a break, you really may just get nothing for it, especially when you're buying a spot in a break. So I think singles, and I actually have like firsthand evidence, at least if you have, well, at least like, you know, I've been calling myself a sharpshooter since I really stopped opening product 15 years ago, because I found that all I was doing was losing money. Now I buy singles, and it's been financially extremely rewarding. So I just disagree. It can be, though, if all you're buying is the hottest rookie and they break an ankle. Fun Bobby says breakers are becoming filthy rich from gamblers with no self-control and a credit card. And Simon says there's a reason why the Breakers Pavilion of the National feels like a casino. And after going through all those, I've got 50 unread comments. So guys, I'm not going to get to them all, but I'm now going to turn it back over to Alex. I hope you've been taking notes, Alex. There's a lot there. I want you to, Joe, keep eating that popcorn, because Alex is going to go off for a bit here, I think.
Yeah. I am going to answer some of these questions specifically, but I'm going to kind of generalize a lot of this. So first and foremost, this is a layered issue, and all of this deserves real conversation. So I'm going to start by saying gambling has always been a part of the hobby in some form. We were just talking about that. That's something that Jeremy has touched on several times, and I couldn't agree more. That thrill of the unknown, the chase for a rare pull, that's been there since the beginning. But what's changed is the access. Again, with these platforms, everything has just turned into 24/7 exposure. You're no longer grabbing a pack at your local store, once in a while. You're ripping at 2 a.m. on a Tuesday, bidding, on auctions subconsciously, not even realizing that your thumb is hitting the bid button. You're joining breaks while half listening, in a meeting at work. Like, the hobby went from casual to constant, and that's when the line sort of started to blur, right? So with that, when it comes to sealed wax or breaks, there's a big difference. Stashing sealed product may not necessarily feel like gambling, but the intent often mirrors it, right? You're holding it, you're investing in something, and you're hoping that it spikes in value at some point. So you're keeping it sealed to avoid the guilt of ripping it all in one go. Perhaps it's like some sort of delayed gratification, and you have some self-control that you didn't just rip it open, but it's still sort of tied to that same dopamine loop. And the ultimate goal, right, is to win, is to profit on that. So that hope for value and that underlying sort of impulse is gambling. Breaks specifically, and again, I mentioned there are layers to this. Breaks specifically are gambling in plain sight. You're paying for a randomized chance, and you, most of the time, 90% of the time, you either walk away with nothing or you walk away with a fraction of what you invested in, right? It's a slot machine just wrapped in shiny cardboard and a whole ton of influencer energy. You've got the excitement, you've got community, you've got the pressure, everything is sort of mixed together. And that cycle just creates something that's really, really dangerous. And again, especially for younger collectors who are more prone and more impressionable and vulnerable to addictive behaviors and predators and bad actors in the hobby. So going to the question where somebody asked, should packs have warning labels like cigarette boxes? I mean, honestly, like, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because whether it's like buying into breaks, stashing sealed wax, ripping packs by yourself when you're feeling down or like you're feeling that itch, they're all addictive triggers, like, all around us. Even just like something very subtle, like a message that says this product contains randomized content, odds of pulling a high value card or making your money back are extremely low. Please collect responsibly. Please rip responsibly. It doesn't really matter how we word it. We just need to make sure that underlying message is consistent. And that can really, really go a long way. And it's not about killing the fun. It's not about canceling the hobby. We always say we're not anti-hobby. It's just about being more informed, making intentional decisions, collecting with purpose, collecting with clarity. And it's about giving people the tools to pause, self-reflect, and sort of just take a step back and make sure that, again, they're going about their hobby within their means. Because the truth is, the hobby is no longer low stakes or kid-centered, right? It's fast, it's loud, it's expensive, and it's designed to keep you hooked. These platforms have added in all of these bells and whistles to make it look like a casino. And, when I showed my dad recently the user experience on Whatnot, he was scratching his head. He was like, this is literally like being inside of a casino. I feel like I'm at Harrah's in Atlantic City right now. And it's crazy because we're also just like accustomed to it. We're almost numb to it. We see it all the time. So nobody's really like putting two and two together and realizing that this is what it is. It was designed this way to make more money. So, you know, with all that being said, we're not saying don't collect. We're just saying know what you're getting yourself into, because if we keep pretending that it's all just harmless fun, more people are just going to keep getting hurt. And the industry's silence, you know, won't be so easy to excuse. So, you know, I think we're sort of at that breaking point where if we don't act now, we don't make the changes and start to really aggressively push for industry reform as a collective community, we're going to be doomed. The next generation is not going to be set up for success.
Okay. Well, thank you for all that, for responding to all that. I've got a lot of things to say, so I'm going to take a moment and gather my thoughts in my notes here and let Joe, if you don't mind, just share what you've been thinking, Joe, as you've been listening to all the comments I was reading and to Alex's response, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I mean, I would just underscore Alex's point that, you know, this is very nuanced, and complex, right? There's a lot of different components to this, from the industry to the individual. I tend to focus on the individual, and anytime I see individuals that, you know, are being hurt by a particular situation, if, you know, that's concerning to me, because I'm empathetic. And I guess, you know, to get to brass tacks, I've never been in a break, but you know, I have ripped some wax, and I think where my brain goes as a practical person is what would be the right amount for breakers to charge, a more modest amount, I would think, to facilitate, you know, pack opening, the breaking of isolation, the thrill of the hunt, all the different things that this pursuit sort of is compelling, why it's compelling to people. I don't think breaking's going away, but I do think that safeguarding the ways in which it's conducted is important to all of us, even if we're not breakers, because it does create a healthier hobby ecosystem to have people not fleeing, and also, more importantly, way more importantly, human beings, you know, having their lives impacted in critically negative ways. So, you know, my question would sort of be along the lines, you know, I've loved the chat tonight. The chat's been on, you know, I don't want to say on fire, but they've been very engaged. And I guess, you know, the question becomes, is there a sweet spot where people can be at least doing breaks, but without the massive markups that already are inherent to most ripping of wax, right? If we think of 30% ROI, but then breakers are finding a way to sort of fractionalize the spots that make it even more and more and more of a leap. I guess that's one lever, right? But the most critical lever that I think Alex is on the front lines with is helping the individuals. And that's, you know, that is essential, and there's all kinds of corollaries in the world. It's not just sports cards, but here we are. This is a sports card show. This is our hobby, and so we should be stewards for the greater good.
Yeah, we're not going to get into Labubu, unfortunately, because this is a sports card channel, but you know, we have talked about some other things as well, of course. So a couple of things I wanted to say, and thank you, Joe. So I started talking about all this addiction stuff here on, well, myself on my various platforms, i.e. Instagram, X, and YouTube, after listening to an episode of the Shallow End podcast, the Iowa Dave show, one of my favorite podcasts out there. And when he talked about that's why I'm calling him what does he call them? The casino in your pockets, the group rate. I forget exactly the words he used, but the casino in your pocket era of the hobby. And I was listening to the podcast and I, the next day I put out a post on Instagram and Twitter that got a ton of engagement and a lot of pushback against me for I did mess up a part of the post where I kind of did get something wrong, but it was after listening to Iowa Dave. And before I put out my post, we got on the phone, Dave and I, and I said, hey, listen to your pod. And Dave and I are friends. We talked on the phone before. I said, Dave, listen to your podcast. There's one thing though that I didn't agree with, and I want to make sure I understand it and just see if we can get on the same page, because it didn't make sense to me. Where he kind of in the podcast, and I'm paraphrasing, so Dave, please forgive me if I'm not saying this right, but he kind of said that, you know, gambling, you can gamble on these online casinos like the Whatnots, Fanatics, Lives, etc., but going into an LCS is not gambling. And I said, well, I think it is. I think it, not all the time, but I think it can be. So we had a long conversation. We ended that conversation basically with agreeing that it's not that buying wax at an LCS isn't gambling. It's what Alex was saying before. We've all agreed. It's the ease of access and the lack of friction to buy cards, to buy into breaks and break product online, whether you're part of a group break or whether you are buying a personal box for yourself, as they call them, Percy's now, I've come to learn. So that's what triggered me to put up a post. And I'm going to put it on the screen right now for anybody who didn't see it. It right here, it says, if Whatnot, this is me talking, if Whatnot and Fanatics Live are breaking casinos, and let's be honest, your LCS is one too. Ripping wax has always been gambling. I stand by all this to this day, and that has to do with my own real experiences and friends' experiences. I go on, and this is where I get it wrong. Same odds. That's wrong. And Rob from Burbank said it's not the same odds because group breakers will mark up. He calls it the VIG, the markup. It'll be higher. I agree. The higher the price, the worse the odds. Now, getting something doesn't change, but the it's like the risk is different. But so I agree that that's a bit, that wasn't correct. I say same odds, same risk. I think that was incorrect now. I go on to say different vibe, different decor. That's what Alex was saying. It's the high pressure sales. It's the trying to get people to spend more money. It's almost like not all great breakers do this, but shaming people to spend more money on certain spots. Anyway, I go on to say, it's not about where you rip, it's that you're ripping. Now I stand by this, but I did put out a follow-up post the next day, which I'll share with you right here, where I said, you know, I'm here for the passion. Respectful disagreement helps us all get sharper. My post yesterday sparked a great discussion. I'm glad it did. I added clarification after realizing I was wrong about the odds part. That's on me. Most agree. There's a gamble in opening wax, whether it's at your LCS or through a live casino in your pocket break. The differences are in accessibility friction and, in many cases, high pressure sales and inducement. Now, I think that all makes sense. And Alex and I had a good conversation about this the other day. So, and now, excuse me, Alex, I think we were on the same page. Is there anything that you want to add to any of that or comment on?
I mean, it's obviously very subjective and there are layers to it. And I like the way you phrased, repeat what you said again regarding, you know, just the layer of friction.
Yeah, I said right here, the differences are in accessibility, which these are, we've already talked about these tonight, friction, and in many cases, and not all cases, but the high pressure sales and the inducement to spend either your first penny or your last penny.
Yeah, that is so well worded. So, you know, is ripping at an LCS still gambling? Yes. I mean, for all intents and purposes, yes. If you're paying a premium for a sealed product, where the outcome is unknown and the goal is to profit or hit big, however you want to word it, it's functionally gambling. That's just the basic definition of gambling, risking money on an uncertain outcome in hopes of a reward. So the fact that it's cardboard instead of cash doesn't change the psychology behind it. Just because, you know, you've made the concerted effort to drive to your local card shop and purchase a pack of cards in person and do it responsibly as opposed to, you know, passively on your phone at 2 a.m, it's all sort of still the same, like, experience at the end of the day. So, you know, again, ripping in person at your local card shop might feel more nostalgic or grounded compared to high stakes breaks on a live streaming platform, but the behavior is essentially the same. You're chasing a result, you're spending with hope, and often you're risking more than you realize. The difference is visibility and frequency. So live breaks add public pressure, the social validation component, the rapid fire repetition. And even if you're just, you know, sitting quietly in an LCS parking lot or, you know, at home ripping a box or ripping box after box because you just, you know, sort of have a feeling that that big hit is coming up, you're still in that same emotional loop. So it's not about sort of where you rip, like the environment or the setting. It's why you're ripping, you know, asking yourself why, joy versus compulsion, how often you're doing it, whether it's like occasionally or obsessively, and what you're risking, right? Whether that's your money, and it's not always about just your finances, it's about your mental health, your relationships. So if you're not thinking about the outcome, the cost, or the consequences, then chances are it's sort of crossed over into this gambling territory. And the sooner we start to recognize these patterns, the sooner we can bring mindfulness back into the hobby. Because at the end of the day, collecting should be fun, but we just, you know, we don't want to confuse fun with free reign, right?
Yeah. You know, makes me think of another story. And I shared this one with you, Alex, the other day. I'll share it with the audience here. This goes back to probably 2007 in that era. A friend of mine who's not in the hobby worked at a company, and he had a guy in his company who was a card collector. And he said, "Oh, you collect cards? My buddy Jeremy, he collects cards too. I should introduce you." So he did. So I met this guy local, and you know, I'd see him at the card shop after here and there, the trade nights and that sort of thing in 2007, 8, 9. I get a phone call from him one day and he says, "I need you to come over and buy everything I have." I said, okay. Like, you know, I was just starting to get into the card show game, setting up as a vendor. I thought, oh, great. I'm going to get some new inventory sort of thing. So went over to his house and we start chatting, and he starts telling me a story about how he's been buying wax at the LCS to the point where he, you know, on his way home from work, he'd stop, he'd spend $1,300. His wife would ask him, what's this charge on the credit card? And he would say, "Oh, I had to get new tires put on the car," sort of thing. I don't know how, you know, that's what he would tell her. And this happened to the point, it happened to him to the point where it was happening so much, he was running out of excuses where the family money was going. He finally came clean to his wife, and they agreed that in order to save their marriage, he had to sell everything. So he called me up, went over to his house again. He filled me in what was going on, looked at the stuff. We made a deal. He helped me load it into his car, not just the cards, but like, you know, blaster tin, not like tins of like Upper Deck hockey, the empty tins that had supplies in them. Everything that was hobby related had to go. He had an uncut sheet of the cup, had to go. I had it on my wall for many, many years. I just sold that a couple years ago, actually. The guy had to literally leave the hobby altogether to save his marriage. And that was when I first realized that, like, yeah, I've gone to the LCS and dropped $4,000 and drove home in shame, like I would feel if I lost money at a blackjack table. But this is the first time I saw somebody who was lying to his wife about it for months and months, spent like, I'm gonna guess, this is me guessing, I remember, like, call it $100,000. And back then that was a lot more money than it is now. And he had to sell to save his freaking marriage. So I just mentioned this because it's another example of what people are facing in this hobby. They're not talking about it. Now Alex is providing a community and a service and a support group for people who might be able to, you know, if this guy's lucky, he saved his marriage. I felt a bit like I was providing a wonderful service. I almost felt like a counselor in a way, that I came in and helped him save his marriage because he didn't know where else to go. I'm sure he could have taken it somewhere, but anyway, I felt really good that I was able to help him out. And so I tell that story. It's also to emphasize this is before the days of Whatnot or any of these casino in your pocket kind of platforms. This was just from Alex. This has nothing had nothing to do with ease of access. On his way home from work every day, he would just stop and drop, you know, whatever, $300, $1,200, $1,500 until, again, he had to stop to save the marriage. Okay, I want to mention that. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, and then we're gonna go back to you, Alex, was, and it's in the comments here. So let's just do this first. We're going to read a few comments, and I'm going to stumble into where I'm going, and then we're going to go back to you, Alex. So Yelio Williams says, pulling a nice card out of a pack is an essential hobby experience, in my opinion. I don't know about that. I don't know if it's essential myself, although I've done it, so I shouldn't say it isn't, but I don't know that it's essential. I think there are other ways to hobby, but I get it. Let's Go Jordan says, IPC, Babe Ruth, and Michael Jordan. Do these count as, maybe he means as gambling? I don't think so. I think those are pretty darn safe. Mark Santucci says, I had Chad Blesnick on the show a while ago. He's a full-time gambler, I don't know if how involved him. I don't know if he's a breaker himself. I know Blez is a breaker. I don't know if he is or not. Midlife says, I agree, Jeremy. Have Ziggy on. I want to hear both sides of this. Brett Miles says, breaking can be fun, 100%. Breaking to the point where you're in massive debt, not so much. A lot of conversation, Joe, about what you were snacking on. Jeremy says, what is Joe snacking on? To which Brett says, the chat is so spicy that Joe got the popcorn out. And Midlife says, looks like popcorn. Ziggy No says, breaking needs a makeover. Too many negative images. And this is the comment I was waiting for. I think this is a really insightful comment from Ziggy. And this is where I wanted to say that, you know, should break, the makeover might be towards responsible and integral breakers who are showing integrity, who are cutting people off, who are maybe issuing warnings and that sort of thing, if they're willing to, should breakers like that be celebrated? Should they be propped up as leaders in the space instead of the ones who are doing the most revenue, but are also doing the most damage and high pressure sales and inducement and trying to get that last penny out of the addict in their breakers rooms? I want to put that all over to you now, Alex, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are different types of breakers. There are different, you know, ways that these breakers go about engaging their audience. Ziggy also mentioned something else that I want to touch on. And that comment was, not all breaks. Alex refers to all breaks as gambling. It's a method of purchasing too. If there is no profit, is it a gamble? If it's free, is it a gamble? Yes, you can break at lower prices, you can share risk, but we watch one bad breaker overcharge and all breakers are not the same. So, you know, I think that encompasses everything we're talking about here. I totally get where Ziggy is coming from, and I appreciate him pulling over to send that message thoughtfully. I know he was driving, and then he stopped to chime in. So I think Ziggy is right in that not all breakers are created equally, and there are definitely formats that share risk more fairly or are offered at more reasonable prices. And I'm not here to paint every breaker as a bad actor. Or, you know, somebody with malicious intent. There are honest community-driven breakers out there that are doing it the right way. There's no doubt about that. But here's the distinction I'm trying to highlight, right? When the format mimics gambling behavior, uncertain outcome, monetary risk, and a prize-based reward system, it starts to mirror the mechanics of gambling, even if the intention isn't malicious. So even free breaks, while obviously not financially risky, they can still reinforce this sort of same dopamine loop and addictive behavior, especially in younger participants who are being conditioned to crave that hit. It can almost serve as a gateway. Honestly, that's how like gambling platforms suck in a lot of their customers. They send them a free bet or they send them a deposit match. And it's like, oh, it's free, you know, it can't hurt. I'm just gonna do it once. And then they watch the game and it's super close and it comes down to the wire and they lose on a bad play or a missed shot or whatever the case may be. Next thing you know, you feel like you just got, screwed out of a couple hundred bucks, right? So you take your own money and you double down. And that's exactly how you get sucked in. that's also how compulsive gamblers who are trying to sort of take a break or self-exclude or cool off, again, get sucked back in. They're like, this time is different. I'm just going to, use this deposit match once or use this free bet, and then I'll, take a step back. No, that's not how all of this is designed. It's like, it's literally set up as a trap to suck you in and spit you out. So sort of to tie it all together and to Ziggy's point, profit isn't the only factor. It's not always about whether the value of what you got matches or exceeds what you paid. It's about how frequently you're engaging, what you're feeling when you're watching or buying in, and whether it's starting to impact your mindset or your behavior outside of the hobby. So I'm all for fair prices, shared risk, and community first approach, but I think we need to shine a light on the structures that take advantage of people, especially when high pressure and lack of transparency are involved, right? So it's not about anti-hobby, not anti-breaker, anti-breaking. It's just about pro awareness and pro education, educating these young consumers, these young customers who just frankly have no idea what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe. Thanks, Alex. Joe, do you have any thoughts on this last little segment here? And then we'll go to some comments again.
No, I really appreciated Alex's breaking it down there. I hadn't thought about that, I guess, because I'm a little bit removed. I do think of ROI, but what you're getting at, Alex, is just the whole behavior that's geared to kind of stimulate the limbic system in the ways that it does. And, why should someone like I, care about this? It's because I care about the hobby and I care about people, right? That getting back to that fundamental. But I know, I'm not naive enough to think there's not a lot of other ways that, people can ruin their lives out there or go down a dark hole that impacts their life. All sorts of ways to tumble down. But in this space, which is, a space I care about, it is unfortunate when you see people's experience kind of become something that not only doesn't keep them in the hobby, but impacts their life in a potentially negative way. And I guess what I'm taking away from this conversation too is just all things in their right proportion. I mean, I definitely have some compulsive behaviors in relation to how I hobby. And at various moments, I've been concerned about my own relationship to, acquiring cardboard. And I think for that reason, I do have a lot of empathy for people that are, putting their lives at risk, for lack of a better word. And it's also kind of mirroring in my mind a little bit of the uptick in sports gambling. I mean, you're seeing legalized gambling emerge in all sorts of states now. It's probably never been easier to bet on sports. And you see it advertised in actual sporting events, which I find kind of amazing, because you can't help but question, is Scott Foster being put into the referee crew to extend the series? Scott Foster is a referee in the NBA, and there was, a big commotion online about whether or not his refereeing of a critical game in the NBA Finals was tantamount to Adam Silver deciding, or at least wanting the series to go more than five or six games, or a particular team to win. So I think we've got a large problem in the whole sports world and in the card world. I do agree with what Greg said in the chat earlier. Children whose brains have not fully developed have even less of a chance. Now, I don't know if they're actually breaking or not. I don't know how much that's actually happening, but you do see kids in the showroom floors going around hunting for their kabooms, transacting in a way where they don't seem to really appreciate the cards themselves. And that's sad to me. As a hobbyist, a lifelong hobbyist, I really would love to shift the conversation out of, these these economic flipping kind of situations and a little bit more into the appreciation of the cards.
Yeah, well said, Joe. And like O says, Joe is hitting it right on the head. Yeah, lots of great comments there, especially the parallel with sports gambling itself. We're gonna go to some comments now, guys, and a lot of this will follow up on what we've been talking about. Triple V says this topic would make a great hobby documentary. Interview those affected as well as the companies behind these breaks, which includes the manufacturers. Then overlay percentages, odds, etc., in order. To drive home the point. Chris C says, Whatnot is a casino, so is your local LCS. Except that the LCS has a lot of non-casino. Like, you can go into an actual casino in Vegas and you've got gift shops and you've got restaurants and you can get massages. That's the non-gambling part. An LCS has, I think, non-gambling aspects as well, other services and that, but certainly can act as a casino. Fun Bobby says, I lost 40K to breaking in the blink of an eye. It just adds up really fast. It's always on to the next break. Texas Ranger says, I think he's talking about my post, says it triggered others too. Texas Rangers, I think that's what that was about. Not enough context there. Fun Bobby said, breaking is not entertainment if it affects people financially. Hobby Champ said, if you're going to become addicted to the hobby, become addicted to buying high-grade rookie cards of all-time greats from the 1910s to the 50s, 99.9% of ultra modern will collapse in value. I agree with everything there, Hobby Champs, except the high grade part. Low grade, high eye appeal, I would add to that. Ziggy No says, I have reached out to other breakers and I reached out to Whatnot and Fanatics too. We all want the same, a better hobby. We need to stop attacking each other. I know, ironic coming from me. Ziggy, to me, it shows some growth as well, which I think is great, but thank you for the comment. Fallowball says, I'm addicted to sports cards live. I'll take it. 1956 Tops Guy, what's up, Matthew? Says, hey, oh, glad to be able to join the live. Glad to have you. Ziggy says, we need more positive transparency to help grow and make breaking better. Odds should be easier to find. Pricing should be transparent. And this ties into what I was saying earlier, where breakers who are doing that need to be celebrated. Not celebrated, but maybe propped up, or at least leading the way, setting the example. Maybe that's a better way of saying it. Mid-Atlantic says, I don't think it's right to blame the breakers when it all starts with the card manufacturer producing a product that can't possibly be consumed at a price point that can't be consumed any other way. Now, listen, Joe is applauding, but I think there's another layer to that, guys. The manufacturers started doing this because of breakers. Breakers came in before breakers came in before manufacturers knew what breaking was. Breakers invented breaking. And it was manufacturers who caught on and started customizing products for breakers. And that's when the costs all started to go up. Dan's Vintage said the reason the boxes are overpriced is because of Fanatics exploiting breaking. Well, again, it's deeper than that, though. Really, Fanatics bought Tops because breaking was there. Breaking came before Fanatics, guys. They came because they saw what Fanatics was able, what Tops was able to do, and Panini, and Upper Deck for that matter, right? And Leaf, with Leaf and Brian Gray kind of invented the repack. Like, Breakers came before the manufacturers realized what they were doing. That I think, like, if you remember, like, if you witnessed the history, breakers came, the manufacturers customized around them. Just wanted to point that out. Dan says, thank you, Alex, for your thoughtful approach and incredible knowledge of this problem. 100%, Dan. Curmudgeon in the house. What's going on, curmudgeon? Fun Bobby said, the hobby doesn't need breakers. The hobby needs lower wax prices. And to that I say, either we're too late or the hobby has to go through another complete cycle, or everybody has to stop buying for that to happen. Otherwise, it's like, it's too late, unfortunately, or for whatever. It's just too late, I think. Ziggy No says, breaking has grown the hobby more in the past 5 years than collecting sets has. Sorry. I think he's completely right. The question is, what Cardboard and Plastic says, is it growing the hobby in a good way, though? Just because things are worth more doesn't mean that that growth is positive. So I think that's a fair back and forth. And I think Ziggy is right, but I think cardboard and plastic has a great kind of rebuttal to that. Fallowball says ROI should not be in a hobby. Now, to which I say, then shut down eBay, shut down all the auction companies, shut it down. This hobby doesn't exist without a potential of ROI for people. Unfortunately, not this hobby, maybe another hobby does, but this one just doesn't at this point. Chris C says the main thing breaking has done is made breakers rich. I think I can't really speak to that too well. I'm not a breaker, but I've heard that that is the case. Mid-Atlantic says, bravo, Joe. There is a direct parallel with sports betting. Yes. And Dan says the modern hobby turning base cards into literal trash is one of the worst sins of the hobby. And I mean, it's funny because not so funny, but I think Dan is right. And I remember, again, before breaking was really big, guys, I remember going to the LCS for trade night or other or whatever day, seeing people opening up boxes, looking for the hits and leaving the base on the counter behind and going home. Literal trash. To the point where a lot of products have changed from being straight hit products, like Upper Deck the Cup. You're getting six cards. Every card is numbered. There's no real base. The base is limited to 249. You know, there are literal products that are only hits now. So, okay, lots there. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I just want to give the counterpoint to the breakers created. It's sort of like the hand feeding the hand feeding the hand, right? I mean, yes, that's a good counterpoint, Jay Lee. Like when the card manufacturers saw that they were sort of missing part of the opportunity to cash in, they started to up the prices and the dance commenced. But I do think, like, I want the card manufacturers to have more integrity than at least some of the breakers. I don't want to lump all breakers together because I do think there are more upstanding and less upstanding versions. But the manufacturers don't have to cave, do they? Do they really have to cave? I mean, there is some degree of relationship between what the retail price is and what the breakers do, or else at some point, you know, there's going to be people not wanting to enter those breaks because they could just buy the boxes. So I mean, who do you want to be held responsible? Do you want Backyards Breaks to be the responsible one, or do you want Topps to be the responsible one? I'd like to think Topps has more long-term investment in that. And Alex, I'm sorry, because this is in some ways immaterial to your work, which is, again, on the addictive nature of it all. It's all addictive and it can all ruin lives. We're just talking degrees over here.
Yeah, no, of course.
Yeah, Joe, you're 100% right. Or at least I should say, I agree with you 100%. And here it is. Mid-Atlantic says, Jay Lee, breakers may have come first, but the manufacturers are pouring kerosene on the fire. Of course they are. They are profit driven and they are often very short sighted, right? They are looking to keep their jobs. They are looking to increase their annual bonuses. They are looking to deliver shareholder value in the near term to keep stock price up, or at least shareholder value if it's a private company. So yeah, they are profit driven. Like, you know, Fallowball says, I don't use eBay or auction houses, and then James Wynn says, are you even collecting then? Like, you know, the thing is that this isn't a hobby, guys. Like it's an industry, and Fallowball is very fortunate. He's found his hobby within it. He still comes here every Saturday night to watch and be a part of the show. And I think he's frustrated because he doesn't like a lot of what he sees. But this is a hobby that everyone experiences in their own unique way. And it lives within an industry. This isn't a hobby overall anymore, guys. It's an industry. You have to realize that. That might be the first thing to realize, that everybody wants your money. Everybody, the grading companies, the supply companies, the breakers, the LCSs, the online casinos, everybody wants your money. The auction houses, everybody wants your money. It's a, it can be a hobby. It's a hobby if you make it a hobby. If you are, if you have the power to make it a hobby and not let it become an addiction, not let it become your financial ruin, enjoy it in your own way. Enjoy it as productively as well as you can. But guys, it's a hobby that exists in an industry that is profit driven. The manufacturers, in many cases, I'd love to have a conversation with like a Michael Rubin or whoever the head of Panini is and ask, like, you know, are you thinking long term the way a lot of us voices in the hobby are? We want this hobby to last for 100, 200 years or whatever, indefinitely, because we love it. We think other people will love it. But if all it is a path to financial ruin, then people won't love it as much. Thankfully, many people, maybe most, have it under control and have found a way to not lose their relationships, their financial well-being and all that in it. Right. But again, I stress, guys, this is an industry. We call it the hobby. Joke's on us. Joke's on us, because it's an industry and we are the hobby within it, but it's up to us to not let the industry get the better of us on an individual level. Alex, I'd like you to kind of put some finishing touches on this, if you will. And then we're going to wrap up this part of the show.
Yeah. Both of you guys just brought up so many great points. You know, one thing I want to touch on real quick before, you know, we sort of close up here is that one of the biggest problems in the hobby right now is that there is no real governing body overlooking what anybody's doing. Manufacturers, platforms, breakers, right? Unlike other industries like gambling or investing, which have oversight from like a gaming commission or the SEC, the card world operates in this sort of gray area, right? Breakers, marketplaces, again, manufacturers, they basically can do whatever they want with zero regulation and zero accountability. So that means no licensing requirements for breakers, no consumer protections for buyers, no rules around transparency, odds, or pricing, and no consequences for predatory behavior. All the things we've been talking about, right? And because there's big money involved, like you said, Jeremy, no one at the top has much incentive to change it. Like, why would Michael Rubin change anything when they're just raking in the dough and nobody's saying anything? Everyone benefits from keeping the system as is, especially when the system favors hype over honesty. So until there's a structure that holds companies and creators accountable, the same way we expect in gambling or financial industries, like you said, Jeremy, this is an industry, right? Collectors, especially younger or more vulnerable ones, are left unprotected. And another great point, there are most people in the hobby, most people in this space are responsible and are able to be accountable and control themselves. But there's still going to be, no matter how you slice it, a handful of people. You know, we don't know exactly what the percentage looks like yet, but there are enough people. It's enough of a problem where we need to step up and do something about it. So it's like playing a game where the house always wins and there's just no referees, and it's the reality of it. And you know, again, like, until something changes, until there's real reform, we're just going to continue to see this hobby spiral in a negative direction. And one last thing I'll say there, it'll be much better suited for the big players, the platforms and the manufacturers and the breakers, for them to adapt to what we're trying to, you know, do here, versus somebody like a governing body, like an SEC or a gaming commission, to come in and just completely, you know, strip it of, you know, everything and just change it up however they see fit. Like, nobody's going to want that. I don't want that. So we just need to be more proactive. We being, you know, all of these higher powers. So, you know, there's a few things I just wanted to mention in terms of like what we offer before I sort of close out and leave here. First and foremost, we mentioned this earlier, we run weekly peer support meetings. If you're interested in joining one of those, you can visit collectorsmd.com, and then under resources, you just click on weekly meetings and it'll take you to a Google form where you fill out the information. And from there, we can add you to these group discussions, which again are really, really helpful and really impactful, especially for those that need it. We also put out daily reflection and educational content on a daily basis. This is bite-sized posts that sort of help you pause, reflect, and approach collecting with more intention. It's not overly preachy. It's just honest. And it's stuff we sort of wish existed when, you know, we were going through the struggle ourselves. We also have our own podcast, which, Jeremy, I'd love, you know, to have you on at some point in the future, where we sit down with collectors, industry voices, mental health professionals to sort of unpack what's really going on in the hobby, basically just more or less what we discussed tonight. It's not about hype. It's not about, like, highlight reels. It's just real talk with real people. And we're also working with some really great partners. We've partnered with a company called Burgess Health, which is a professional online clinic that offers support for people with gambling addiction. And so that sort of layers in a sense of professional therapy for people that might need it within our space, because I'm not a licensed therapist. We've also partnered with Gamban. They basically allow you to block certain software on your phone. And what has always been gambling for them, they've now added Whatnot, Fanatics, among several other apps that, you know, basically you can limit yourself in terms of how much time you're spending within those apps. You know, if you're a part of an aligned organization or platform and just want to help create a healthier hobby ecosystem, where we're always open to conversations. And at the end of the day, you know, this is all about community, accountability, and healing. And we're here to remind people that, again, you can still love the hobby and protect your peace at the same time.
Alex, what's your mantra? I know you have a mantra at Collectors MD.
Collect with intention, not compulsion. And collect with intention, heal with support.
I love it. I love it. Before we let you go, and then we're going to bring on Chris Hoge and Josh Adams, I want to just get some more comments sort of out of the way that I've marked for inclusion here, Alex. So hang tight. Josh and Chris, give me 5 more minutes. Joe, grab some more popcorn. Here we go. Mid-Atlantic says, Jay Lee, breakers may have come first, but the manufacturer is pouring kerosene on the fire. Yeah. Well, not only that, they're customizing products just for them. Okay, next up, Midlife says, give the base cards to your local elementary school. Teachers can use them for math and for prizes. Yeah, give them out on Halloween. Also give chocolates and potato chips, but give them out on Halloween to kids in your neighborhoods. I've been doing that for decades. Ziggy No says, breaking started as friends and a recorded video wasn't even live. And I mean, guys, this was in the late 00s. This wasn't even in the 2010s. Breaking has been around since like 08 or so, if I remember correctly. Linda's First says, without breakers, singles collectors like myself would not have as many cards available. And I do agree with that, but the hobby would be so different. Who knows what we would be getting at that point. 1956 Tops Guy says, everyone wants your money, but some components leverage deficiencies of the human mind to push people into dangerous financial mental territory. That's where I have an issue. That's what this whole show has been about. This whole episode has been about so far, Matthew. Yeah, we all definitely agree with that. Dog Food Soup says, I love that name. Has the proliferation of group breakers led to what seems like a huge increase in the amount of card shows? I was blown away by the number of local shows when I looked recently. And I do think there is a correlation there, but the overall growth is just a part of it. Chris from Missouri, welcome to the show and thank you very much. Brett Miles says, yeah, Jeremy, well said. I get to control how I enjoy the hobby. The moment that you feel someone else, whether it's industry, breakers, shops, online, controls how you're involved in the hobby, that is a huge red flag. Dave H says, with the amount of info now, we can get the case prices, add up the team prices, see what a breaker is making. If you don't like it, don't do business with them. I stopped buying with some because of it. And that's where, you know, the odds are different based on how much you're spending for the same spot. Mid-Atlantic says, baseball cards stopped being a kid's hobby many, many years ago. It's a big business wrapped in bro culture and devoid of oversight. Yeah, bingo. And Phoenix Rising says, Alex, what's your YouTube channel? Go ahead.
I dropped that in the chat, but it is youtube.com/@collectorsmd.
There you go. Appreciate that. There you go. Okay. Well, this has been great, Alex. I want to thank you for coming on and continuing the discussion. I think that what you are doing is the most likely catalyst of seeing some sort of actual material effective change, even if it is simply warnings before you cash out on a on an app or on a website, whatever it is you're doing, and not whatever it is, what you are doing. I think it's important, guys. Like I said, I think it's important. I think it's important for our fellow hobbyists who maybe lack the strength to stop when they should. And I think it's important for the longevity of the hobby overall as well. So Alex, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your time tonight. It's been great having you.
Thank you both, Jeremy, Joe. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you to everybody in the chat too. You guys were great. You know, Ziggy, thanks as always, just for being super insightful and sharing your opinions on everything. We appreciate, you know, all of the support. Again, you know, if you want to learn more about Collectors MD, you check us out on social media or collectorsmd.com. We are here to help. That's all it is. It's all about spreading positive awareness and just reinforcing that, you know, the hobby is a great place. We just want to make sure that we are collecting with intention and not compulsion.
I love it, Alex. Are you going to be at the National?
I'm not this year, but okay. We definitely are talking about, you know, preparing to have presence at not just the National, but Fanatics Fest amongst other card shows in the future.
Alex, thank you again for your time. Thank you for what you were doing. Keep in touch. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Take care.
Carry on.
All right, guys. That was Alex, Joe.